George Balanchine, co-founder of the New York City Ballet and its director for more than 35 years, has been credited with, among other things, being the father of American ballet. However, his upbringing and dance education during the turbulent times of the Russian Revolution in St. Petersburg is not often mentioned. In Balanchine and the Lost Muse, Elizabeth Kendall traces the early life of the famous choreographer and Lydia Ivanova, who studied with him and inspired him in many of his creations. The book is published by Oxford University Press, and I'm very pleased that it brings Elizabeth Kendall back to our show today. Hello.
Hi, Lenny. Hi, listeners.
Aren't you a professor of literary studies? And yet we've talked on the show only about film and dance, not literature.
Yes. I began my writing life as a dance critic, but it's a wonderful way to learn how to write, since you have to capture wordless movement in words. Mm-hmm. I also didn't stick to dance for my books, but branched out into anything that interests me. They don't sort of fit together as a whole. But the end result is I'm very interested in problems of style and what nonfiction can do.
Well, when you're talking about dance, you always come back to Balanchine, don't you?
I always do.
Did you meet him? Have you ever met him?
Oh, yes. I met him on several social occasions at the library, a party at the Performing Arts Library. I would see him in the street, and I did get to interview him once.
Did he ever talk about his Russian years?
That's kind of the way that I got pushed into this book many years after. During the interview with him, he got rid of very quickly and cheerfully our job, which was to talk about the Ford Foundation funding for ballet, and he began to say, okay, now we talk. And I was a young critic, and I was listening with my heart in my mouth, and he started to tell tales about the Russian Revolution. He started to say, do you know how I eat during revolution? I sew saddles. And my jaw dropped. I didn't know what to say, and I felt that I was unknowledgeable, and many years later, I went and found out what he was talking about.
Well, you couldn't have known about Lydia Ivanova at the time because she may have been important to his life, but she's a rather obscure figure, isn't she?
She's a really obscure figure, but she's a little she gets a couple sentences in all of the earlier biographies of Balanchine. And it always intrigued me. This person died. Apparently she was murdered. The rumor persists that she was murdered. And why? And I think evil is a great subject for a nonfiction writer or a fiction writer. So I began this book by thinking, well, if I can find out about her, I would find out a lot about the surroundings. And then I realized I was learning as much about Balanchine, so I decided to make it a double biography.
Were you able to visit the Russian archives to do research for this book?
I lived in the Russian archives, Lenny, and each archive is a story in itself, and each one has a protocol, and you have to learn, and you have to learn who to talk to. But the Russian archives are wonderful places, still paper-based, although that's gradually changing, but with such smart people curating.
Does anyone in Russia know who Lydia Ivanova is?
More people in Russia know than here. Maybe more will now know about her. She was such an important young dancer. But in Russia, ballet is closer to the surface of what you know about.
Ivanova and Balanchine were both students at the Imperial Ballet School in St. Petersburg, beginning when the Tsar was still alive, before the revolution.
Exactly. Their education was kind of sliced down the middle by the revolution. So they were 13 in 1917 when the revolution came.
Was it difficult to be admitted into that school?
Yes. You had to pass a bunch of commissions, 2 days' worth of examinations from different points of view, your knowledge, your bearing, your body. But it was a funny place because its children came not just from some pool of competitive children. They came from either from theater families already in the system of theaters, imperial theaters, or they came from the demi-monde. They were illicit children of high officials with their mistresses, and there was no place to sort of put them except in the court entertainment school.
Well, Balanchine's father was a noted Georgian musician. So I'm assuming he fits into that first category.
Not really, because Balanchine's nuclear family is so crazy. One of the reasons I really wanted to write this book is because I taught myself Russian years ago, and I've been sort of informally adding to it. But since I had that tool, I wanted to really find out what about this crazy family. It didn't make any sense. The father from Georgia, but the father was a real country boy from Georgia, son of a country priest who was ambitious. And he had an earlier family in Georgia whom he abandoned. And it's unclear if he ever divorced that wife. But he became associated with Balanchine's mother in Petersburg. And they were poor. They were struggling. She was almost nobody. He was a struggling composer, not that known. And they won a lottery, which meant they shot up the social scale. And then he tried to handle the money, and he gradually lost it all. So they shot down the social scale.
Was Balanchine the name? It doesn't sound Georgian to me.
No, the name was Balanchivadze. Mm. And the saga of my going, I think I went 8 times to Georgia and will continue to go to Georgia, is part of the fun of the research.
Well, it seems to me if you are a choreographer and you grew up in a musical family, that automatically gives you some sense of the connection of movement to music.
Balanchine definitely had from deep childhood a real immersion in music. And not just Western music, but Georgian music is just like Georgia. It's at the crossroads of many cultures, and it contains many cultures. So it has amazing rhythms and what musicologists call the oldest polyphonic tradition in the world. So he had much more complex rhythms and melodies than most young kids immersed in music.
He's Asian and European at the same time.
Yes.
Now, ballet in France, if you were a ballet dancer, you often were considered a rather, a woman anyway, rather questionable morally. Was that true in Russia as well, or did people want their kids to become dancers?
It was true in Russia as well. St. Petersburg had a very robust demi-monde and very connected to court circles. Someone once said that the Romanovs produced mostly tall sons, very few daughters, and all those Romanov sons, the cousins, the grand dukes, and their cousins and their uncles and their aunts, had a mistress. So the city was not so clean from the religious point of view. So what was the question?
About whether dancers were respected
okay,
in Russia.
So,
would a young George Balanchine say, oh, yes, I want to grow up and become a ballet dancer?
Dancers were looked up to and held in some kind of awe, like entertainment celebrities. But respected, I don't know. For instance, Kshesinskaya, the mistress of Nikolai II, wrote a memoir in which she talked about meeting on the train one of the princesses of the royal family and how they talked all day. They made a contact woman to woman. That princess wrote her memoir as well about that train ride, going to marry someone that she didn't want to marry. And she didn't mention Kshesinska at all. Mm-hmm. So there's a very much a double standard. And Balanchine, the men in ballet, that's another story. Their status is not quite clear, but they were professionals.
Well, it's usually assumed that men in ballet are going to be gay, or not always true, but I don't know whether that was true then.
This was somewhat true, but not as true as our assumptions today in Russia. Many of the dancers were married to each other.
Did he was he happy to be studying ballet? When did it suddenly click and he realized this is what he would want to do for the rest of his life?
That's not clear, but probably a couple of years into the school. He was not happy at all. He was, in a sense, tricked by his mother into coming to audition. He wasn't supposed to audition, or he didn't think he was. And he was then left at the school because the family had lost the money, and by then they lived in Finland in their vacation home, dacha. So he was left at the school, and it was a huge trauma for this 9-year-old little boy.
My guest is Elizabeth Kendall. Her latest book, Balanchine and the Lost Muse, Revolution and the Making of a Choreographer. What about Ivanova? What was her background?
So Lydia's background, her father was in the army, and I loved finding out about the Russian army, a very crazy world. He was an officer. His wife was a homemaker. It was hard to find him because his name is the most common in the Russian language. So I started at zero. I had no documents about her, and I followed my nose to find her. And I talk more about the sources about finding her in the book than any other part. For her, it was putting together photographs and novels and memoirs in Russian. The crossing over of languages and putting what we know in the West and what they know in Russia was a big thought that made me continue. I thought, this is really what I can contribute.
But you said earlier that their education was divided down the middle by the Russian Revolution. So what happens when the revolution occurs? Is dance suddenly seen as a luxury, as something for the elite?
The great complications of what happened, it's of course seen for the elite because it was for the elite, but Lenin's cultural minister, Anatoly Lunacharsky, loved the arts. He wanted all the arts to coexist in the new Bolshevik Republic, and he happened to like dance. So he vowed that this would continue, and he thought that the imperial theaters, which had vast populations of performers, could help him with these revolutionary pageants that he wanted to happen all over the new Bolshevik Republic.
Were they already talking about something like socialist realism, which was later imposed on other artists?
They weren't yet. That came in the 30s with the thing called the drama ballet. What happened in the school was very interesting. A lot of people who'd been let go from the theater for being too revolutionary came back to guide the students, and it was a kind of a little utopia with no food, no heat. Conditions were horrible, but utopian ideals were alive in that school when they were 13 till when they graduated.
Well, we should point out that there was a civil war, and that lasted from 1917 to 1922, and that put a lot of stress on the country.
Quite a lot of stress. St. Petersburg lost more than half its population.
Had the audience changed?
The audience completely changed, and all the people who'd never dreamed of going into an imperial theater came flooding in wearing their boots and their kerchiefs and their old overcoats, and they were so thrilled.
What about the changes in there was a new economic policy that was proposed by Lenin. How was that applied to dance?
This thing called, which we call the NEP, and that's where NEP men and NEP women come from, was Lenin's backtracking to keep his government alive. And it completely threw a wrench into ideological circles because everybody had sacrificed for this utopian ideal. Along came the NEP, and there were casinos, and there were cabarets and shops, and there were rich people. And this was very resented and very confusing to young idealists such as Balanchine and Lydia.
I would assume that ballet companies suddenly were nationalized. They were totally.
They were nationalized at the beginning of the revolution. They became deprived of that national support after the NEP started. So they were really scrambling to keep the theaters alive. Our climate today is the same.
What about the approach to dance? Because a dance has certain conventions and traditions. Around this time, Isadora Duncan is visiting the new Soviet Union and bringing a whole bunch of new ideas to dance. Did that affect the way people would think about ballet?
Isadora Duncan was huge, but it was more than her that was affecting things. Dance, before socialist realism, dance became infected in a wonderful way with the same abstract impulses that, for instance, constructivism in art. Malevich and Elisitsky, they divorced the materials of art from all previous meaning. And that's what people were trying to do in dance. It was a big stretch from imperial ballet, but Balanchine's youth was spent in this idea that we have this medium. What does it look like if you divorce it from all associations and just query it? What is this medium? What can it do?
Make it pure dance as opposed to a storytelling medium.
Right. So the black square and the white square had their equivalent in a 1922 dance experiment.
And where does Eva Nova fit into all of this?
So Eva Nova made her own career still in bit parts before she was 20. She died when she was 20. And she was a very eccentric and powerful dancer and beloved. The city loved her, and they thought she was showing the new way for a woman to dance in Soviet times, full-bodied, impulsive, almost improvisatory, in ways that Balanchine later asked his dancers to dance.
She also hung out with secret police officers. Why that side of her life?
Well, all of the dancers were status symbols. Social habits don't die. Status symbols to the new Bolshevik elite. So if you were a dancer, you were invited to Bolshevik parties the way you'd been invited to demi-monde Romanov parties. She liked to live at a fast pace. She was sort of a whirlwind. And she, I think, was tempted by high life.
And did she dance differently than her predecessors? Did
yes.
she bring something new to
she
her
She brought
style?
Something really new. And it's partly because she was treated as a protege by her father, maybe a little too closely. What she brought was the sense of in the moment. There was no more ceremony. She was a human dancing these steps, not a princess. She broke roles and made them bigger. And everyone who remembered her, namely Russian peers, wrote for pages and pages about the details of the thrill of her performances.
And then what do we know about the night that she disappeared or drowned?
It was an afternoon, and all that we know comes from a bunch of newspaper reports and some memoirs. We know that she was invited out by some Bolshevik fans, that she was in a rowboat, that the rowboat broke and they couldn't get out of the way of a ferry and the ferry rammed them. It broke in half, and three of the five passengers in the rowboat were saved, and two, including Lydia, were not.
Well, that's the official story.
Of course,
there are all these other stories that she was killed.
That she was killed, and those stories have persisted, and Balanchine believed she was murdered.
For what reason?
The reason is never given. The reason given was she knew something from going out with all those Bolshevik guys. But I think maybe it was an affair of the heart, that someone she'd turned down ordered her killed, and she was raped probably, I think, in the meantime.
Ivanova and the dance group were waiting for visas to visit Germany and Europe. But then she never left Russia.
No. The visas arrived right after she was killed or died, which Balanchine always thought was strange, and as did the people in that circle. And they left 2 weeks after she died. So there were four instead of five who left.
Did he ever go back?
Balanchine,
Did he defect to the West at that point?
Yes, they decided en masse, the four of them, not to go back.
Were they ever linked romantically?
They were not linked romantically, and people wonder why I chose the word muse, because Balanchine had a certain number of usually blonde muses whom he made works about. I've used the word muse because the classical version of muse is someone who's represents the knowledge and culture of that time. And I think Lydia was a muse to her era. And she was a muse who made herself with him looking on.
Many years ago, Maria Tallchief was a guest on the show.
Ah.
And she was talking glowingly about Balanchine. And I said, but Ms. Tallchief, he dumped you and for another woman. Why do you talk of him with so much affection? She said, but he was a genius.
You know, he was a genius. He was really he was an interesting genius. Genius sort of shuts down the questions. And I wanted to open them up again with this book, not to consider him a genius born fully made. So why ask further? He was also a human being who was born into a family and had a childhood. And genius becomes more interesting when you look at the conditions.
Well, if he were alive today, after you've done all of this research, what question would you want to ask him?
You know, I dream quite often of his being alive, and I say, at last you can tell me who was your mother, because she really hid herself. I still don't know. I asked her on her own grave in Georgia to tell me who she was, but she still hasn't. But I would ask him that first.
Elizabeth Kendall's most recent book, the one we've been discussing, is Balanchine and the Lost Muse, Revolution and the Making of a Choreographer. It is published by Oxford University Press. Thank you so much for being with us again.
Thank you, Lenny.